Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. So welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Ethan Ward, and Ethan is running a Mysore program in Dubai. And we've met each other several times here in Mysore, India. And I think that really the reason why I'm having him on the show is because he's one of the up and coming Ashtanga people. And I wanted to give him a little bit of a forum to like tell us who he is. And so welcome to the show.
Well, Taylor, thank you very much for inviting me here to your show on the 42nd floor of the Heartbreak Kids Enterprise Tower. It's been a wild journey coming through the security of this building, and I'm very, very happy to be here. Well, I'm just joking. Actually, just for the listeners to understand the context, here we are in a room that can only be described as my living room in a little town or suburb called Gokulam, Mysore. And we are right in the thick of this 2019/2020 season in Mysore.
And how's the season going?
Been fantastic so far. We spoke a little bit before we got started on air with the podcast about this kind of polarity between the first month and the second month. And it's an interesting season because Sharathji, our teacher, is just transitioning over to a new space. It's taken a while to get used to the new place, and I feel very, very well settled into it now.
Yeah, and you're assisting. It's been pretty awesome, I'm sure, assisting in there.
Yes, I've assisted a few years in the old Shala, and now I'm assisting here in the new Shala. I find it really calm, energizing to be in the new space. The other space was intense, and I think that brought a lot of people to Mysore. They like that kind of heat and intensity that the Ashtanga practice has and that the old Shala did have. I feel like this is a more sustainable.
I think so too. I feel like the whole shift into the new Shala has been an energetic shift, really, where the practice is much more peaceful. And I also think like Sharat is much more peaceful as well. Like there's a certain level of anxiety or nervousness with the students, and everything seems like it's went from intense to 100 to like intense 50, which it's still intense in there, but it's a lot less for sure.
Yeah. I think people are much more able to find the zone, and it is definitely like a range of where they're pushing themselves to, and it doesn't have to be 100% every day. And I think Sharathji seems to be accepting that in people.
I think it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to witness, I feel like, to watch. I mean, just over the last decade of watching the big shifts between, you know, the old Shala, new Shala, and after Pattabhi Joyce died to, you know, Sharat taking over, and now like he's definitely got a well-established thing going on. It's been big shifts, but good. I think it's been really good. But let's back up a little bit and let's talk a little bit about like you and where you kind of, where you're from. I know a little bit of the backstory, but where did you grow up?
So I'm originally from South Africa. And I feel like if I were to look back in general over the course of my life, I probably come from a very fortunate background, very privileged background. That's not to say that we've always been really rich or that my parents inherited a lot of money or something like that. Actually, they had a hard time when they had myself and my sister Robin, because they had us very young. They were in university when they had us, and they were kind of just living on toast and the flavor of jam that they could afford, not their favorite flavor. And so they had a difficult time in the beginning. We lived there until my 9th birthday, and then they decided to pack up and move to Dubai to start trying to achieve a little bit better quality of life.
Yeah.
And at that time, Dubai was kind of an up and coming city. Dubai has grown very, very fast. And my dad worked there for a little while. They put us into school, affordable, like an Indian school.
Yeah.
And then my dad started his own business and managed to become very financially successful. And I feel like we've always had everything that we needed in life. We didn't come from a background where we ever wanted for anything. And
was it like Cape Town area, or was it more Johannesburg, or what part of South Africa?
In the early part, we lived in Johannesburg. And even then, you know, like we weren't very poor. I don't remember the few years when they were still in university and had two children and stuff. So I feel like we've always had that. We've always had a lot of freedom. We've always had safety nets. Like, I always felt like I could travel and do things and not work if I wanted to. And that if anything ever got really bad, we have a big family that all love us and all would take care of us in any way that we need.
It seems like, you know, just from what I gather, you know, because you're here with your sister a lot, and that you do have a close-knit family, you know, like how she speaks of you and how you speak of her.
It's we're
you
guys 18 are months really apart, so we've totally grown up together and gone through similar experiences together. We started yoga practice together. And
who started first? You did it, like, you went to your first class together?
Yeah, we started pretty much at the exact same time at the same shala.
So crazy.
Yeah.
What shala did you start at?
When we finished school, we started to go to university in Barcelona.
Okay.
And Barcelona was a little bit a difficult time for us because the city is different than we're used to. I think people think of Barcelona as this romantic, sort of super happy holiday-ish
city.
Whenever we tell people, like, yeah, we studied in Barcelona, everyone's like, wow, you're so lucky. That's so amazing. But actually, when you stay there a long time, there was kind of a conflict between the local people, Catalan people, and the Spanish people, and you can really feel it. There's like some kind of unrest. It's also a much bigger city than we were used to, very concrete, not a lot of open spaces. And so during that time, I guess for me in particular, I took it kind of rough, and I think I needed to go through a period of difficulty to be able to extract benefit from the Ashtanga practice. As I said, we always felt very sheltered and very privileged.
Sure.
We always had options. And I think in a lot of cases, people that come to the Ashtanga practice do so because they want to move away from something in life which is not being fulfilled properly.
Sure.
And during those years in university, I spent some time like really exploring my consciousness and trying to use different substances to see what this, what it all is. And it wasn't quite, I guess, because it was just those few years, it wasn't quite away from darkness type of story.
That was a great little, you just added in my book title. That was very good. So how old were you when you were there?
So that would have been probably about between 19 and 21 or 22, something like that.
So, so Barcelona gave you like an opportunity to just kind of feel what you didn't want anymore.
Yeah. In my last year at school there, I felt like I'm definitely not going to make it through this year. I'm not going to do it. I don't want to. I'm sick of the course. I'm not going to pursue it after I finish. And I was just pretty much at a point where I was done. And so it wasn't that I had this mentality shift that I need to start yoga, I need to start some kind of dedication practice or devotional thing or something like that. I just wanted to change something, wanted to be more active or do something like that. And I had the idea that maybe I'll go to the gym or do some kind of sports. Yeah. But the yoga place was next to a house. So,
wow, what a coincidence.
So that was the obvious choice. And my girlfriend, Shamal, went by herself for about a week, maybe 2 weeks, she went to try the yoga thing. And she said, hey, guys, you'll probably like it. Let's give it a go. And when we did, it was cheaper to sign up for 1 month than to take one class. So I just went all in. Wow. And I got 1 month. And it just so happened to be traditional Ashtanga, okay, Mysore class.
What was the shala called?
Pacifica Ashtanga Yoga. The okay. teacher's name is Paz Munoz. She's from Chile and she's moved back there since.
So yeah, she doesn't have
a shala in Barcelona anymore. And yeah, it was really incredible. So we went there on the first day, really having no idea what to expect. What was the difference between this or any other type of yoga or anything, sure, anything like that. And the first day I just crushed it, man. I was amazing. I was like this young, strong, fit 21-year-old guy. I think I might have made it to Pashasana that day. It was pretty amazing. Wow. No, I'm just joking. That didn't happen. The way that I felt coming out of that class that day was, can only be described as bloody embarrassed, man.
Most of the time I feel like people experience that like the first time, especially if you have no experience and you walk into your first Ashtanga class and it's a Mysore class, yeah, or whatever, and they teach it like in a very traditional way. Mm. You walk out and it's like, I mean, the teachers like cross their fingers that the person like comes back.
You know? I think it's because I was 21 or something. Maybe it's just a thing of youth, but I had this idea before that class that I was quite strong and flexible. Yeah. And I don't know where I got that from because it had never been tested in the way that it was tested that day. So I had a very hard class and I left with like my eyes were big, like saucers when I left. I remember running into my neighbor on the way home. He said, what happened to you, man?
I was
like, I felt like I'd been through some kind of exorcism. I later found out that the sequence that I managed to learn that day is called Surya Namaskara A.
Okay.
And
so you only did like 20 minutes or
Surya Namaskara A. I can't remember how long it was, but I remember shaking in downward facing dog, being like, this is 5 breaths. I'm only on breath 3.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I found it pretty intense, and looking around the room, there's like people standing on their heads, old ladies controlling their body weight and floating around, yeah, the room. And so yeah, it was pretty intense experience. And I, to be honest, I don't think I would have gone back if I had paid for 1 day. I paid for the month and I just had to kind of stick it out. I didn't even do the 6 days a week that month, but I went as frequently as I could, and it wasn't a long time. It was a matter of weeks, I think, that I remember having an experience where I was standing on my balcony one morning and I said, I'm going to do this practice for the rest of my life.
Wow. And so how did you get to that point? Especially, well, let me back up, because I want to know the answer to that question. But also, like you said, physically it was demanding for you, but was it somewhat humiliating that you couldn't do this stuff and you felt like you were like a strong young person? Or maybe not humiliating.
I guess I was surprised by how weak I was compared to the other people in the room. And I think, like, my advice, if anybody is listening who has not yet started their journey in Ashtanga yoga, is to just go without any expectation. Just go there and like follow one movement at a time, one breath, see if you can integrate that, because it's a slow process. And to be honest, like, since then, most of the time when I learn a new asana, it's not like, oh yeah, that's perfectly intuitive, I'll just pop my body into that position. It's
right.
Like, even if it's easier than some of the positions, or technically easier, looks easier,
right,
than some of the positions you're familiar with, it takes some time to integrate a new position. And going through that Surya Namaskara sequence, I didn't even realize that I was doing a lot less than everyone else. I mean, I understood the basics, like, okay, here's the sequence, and,
right,
and we're only going to do the beginning. But you know, I had no expectation of ever learning the full primary series or practicing on a regular basis at that time.
And so how did you get to that point when you were standing on your balcony and all of a sudden, like, you come to the realization that you're going to do this every single day?
The information about the practice was disseminated to us pretty gradually. We didn't get too much too fast. We learned it always one asana at a time. I started by going to the evening classes. Where I was in life at that time, I just wouldn't have gone to a morning class. And so I see now that there's a lot of value in having the evening sessions.
Sure.
And I remember going there in like my long pants and shirts, and like it just evolved quite, it seemed like gradually, like I didn't notice that there was a whole lot of evolution happening. But at a certain point, my teacher said, you need to be coming more regularly. You're coming about 3 times a week. And I didn't really know why. At that time, myself and my girlfriend Shamal had a conversation about it, and we were like, but we've already paid for the month. What difference does it make to her if we come or if we don't come? And she said, yeah, you must come. But we just did because she told us to. And she was different than anyone that I knew at that time. Like, I'd never seen anything like this woman. She just like floated around the room. When she told you something, you would do it. And she would be gentle and nurturing, but also if, like, every word that she said would like resonate and like you'd hang on to it. And there's nothing that she could. I've also not mostly been somebody who bows to authority very easily, but for some reason in this case, you know, when she would say something, then, you know, that's what's happening right now. That's not, it's not debatable.
That happens in the Mysore room a lot. Especially when someone's really holding the space, like in a really good way.
Yeah. And we later found out that she, I don't know why, because we talked about the practice a lot. We talked about everything, about how we were feeling and what happened in the class. A few years later, myself and my girlfriend and my sister had a conversation about it, and it seemed like she taught us in very different ways. She was a lot more strict with my sister. She was very nurturing towards Sharmal, my girlfriend. And so I really appreciate that.
What was the personality that she taught you?
Maybe a little bit of a mix. She challenged me for sure, but I didn't feel like she was very hard on me, like very, very strict. I didn't feel like she was a person that I disliked or like she was making me do things that I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she took care of me. She was what I needed at that time.
Oh, that's good. So what about like the psychological benefits of that first month? Like, you know, is that what made the big shift between like, you know, you want to do this every single day? Did you feel differently, like, inside your head?
That's good that you brought that up, because that's probably going to be the answer to your previous question about how I got to the point that I was going to do this every day. Because the first benefit that I noticed about the practice before any of the physical stuff was actually just how confident and aware I was during the day outside the practice. So I started with the evening classes, but then she told us to start coming in the morning. And when we started coming in the morning, then I realized that my day was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I was never so focused and alert and aware and able to do my work. That got me through that last year of school in Barcelona. Yeah. I was actually interested in my work. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Even when you thought, like, before yoga that you weren't going to finish?
Yeah, before I started, I had decided that I'm not going to finish this year. And then when I did, I was like, I can handle this, the work, and like, everything's fine. And I was very open to like all of the interactions that I had to have, which was a lot, like going around the city and working with different people. That last year of school, they gave you a lot of work to do. And, I was able to handle all of that very level-headedly, and so I guess that was it, that the practice actually gave me a lot of confidence and awareness. I never felt like I was drifting off during the day.
Were you someone who lacked discipline in their life, like before you came to the practice, or was that always like kind of a part of your routine?
I was not someone who would lean into discomfort very easily. I would do what was comfortable. And because I had a good background, maybe reasonable intelligence, I always did pretty well in things. So in school, I did fine, even without working too hard. I never really pushed myself to do like, you've got to be amazing at academics or amazing at sport or,
sure,
or anything like that. But I always just did, you know, well enough, and I was happy with that. And when I went to this this school in Barcelona, I was studying art direction, which is like a mix of advertising, design, and photography, and video making, and all that type of thing. And the business that my dad had started in Dubai was an advertising agency. I just felt like I already knew all this stuff. I just felt like, you know, I'm going to be here for
your
dad.
You got the best education with your dad.
Yeah. I didn't feel like I have to work very hard to do well enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that last year, because they really pile the work on you, I was able to handle it.
Yeah.
I felt ready for it. So I think the practice gave me a lot of that.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you worked your edge, and you also empowered you to push through something that you felt like was really uncomfortable for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so weird. Like, I'd been only doing this practice for a few months, but I knew that that was what gave me control and power and confidence. Before presentations, I would like go to the back and do some Serena mascaras, and then I would come up and like present. I just feel like if I release my hamstrings or something like that, then the tension goes.
Yeah.
I can be myself, and or not even be myself, because that's like, there's some kind of funny connotations to that. But I could just be. I could just be there and let whatever needs to come through me come through without being so caught up in my head and worrying about your interaction with the world around you. It wasn't me dealing with the situation. It was just, this is happening.
So you're kind of getting out of your own way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yes.
So what about, so how did you make the decision that you'd come to Mysore? How did that happen? Which I think I was assisting the very first trip that you
Is
guys
it?
Had come.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Because I remember your sister saying like, oh yeah, you were the first person to help me catch my ankles or something like that. Like,
yeah, cool.
And because you came with her the first trip, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whenever my teacher Paz would speak about Sharat, there was something in the way that she would speak that created some kind of admiration for the idea of coming to Mysore. I always felt like there was something special there. There was this connection. I remember being surprised when she started talking about it, because we didn't realize that there was all of this, that there was lineage. We thought that she was the practice. She was the teacher, and this was her.
This is just what she was doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And at a certain point in our shala, there was this scratched up disc going around, and it was a DVD that people were just passing around, no box or anything. And it was a film called Mysore Magic. And in that film, it's a little bit kind of homemade, little interviews with some of the more senior teachers, and also some relatively green students in Mysore. And they just kind of go around the town and film little interviews with people. And we found it really fascinating. And what we really liked about it was our teacher was in it.
Oh.
that was really impressive to us. And so we were like, oh, okay, cool. This is where Paz goes. We're going to go here sometime. So the seed was planted. It was already in there. And we didn't know how we would make it to Mysore, but we knew that the road would lead to Mysore at some point. And so we probably spent less than a year practicing with Paz before we finished school in Barcelona. And we left and we just started traveling. And we knew that soon we would get to Mysore. And we were very fortunate to have come to Mysore after practicing for a little over a year.
Wow.
So our first trip to Mysore was when we were still pretty new students. We passed through some other shalas where we learned from other teachers. Another one that made a big impact on me was Dylan Bernstein. Mm-hmm. And we studied with him in Barcelona. In Bali. Where he was covering for some friends of his. And so it was, we really felt like, okay, so it's these teachers from this lineage that have this this ability and knowledge and ability to teach in a certain way. And during that time of exploration, we also managed to go to a real commercial yoga place in Bali and try every type of yoga that there was.
That
was the experience where we saw, oh, that's the difference between what we've been doing the whole time and all the other types of yoga. We did like 5 or 6 classes a day. And we just, you know, it's supposed to be a good studio. I think the teachers there are well qualified in their traditions or in their methods.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I can't say anything bad about the other types of yoga, but just for me that they weren't really the yoga practice. They were more like a bit of fun. So we would go to them and we would enjoy listening to the music. We would enjoy the teacher's upbeat voice and, you know, chatting to each other.
Right.
And, oh, here's a difficult pose. Just help the person next to you do it. Modify version 1, version 2, version 3 for advanced people.
Right.
And then, so it was a bit of fun, but still like over that time, I was like, wow, so really want to get back to my
regular practice.
And so, when we made it to Mysore, we were also fairly new to the practice. Actually, I had just a couple of asanas of second series, which of course you take off when you get to Mysore.
You start back over. Everyone starts back over at zero.
Yes.
Or actually, maybe it's not zero, but at primary series.
Yeah, primary series, if you're proficient in that.
Yeah.
Meeting Sharath was really amazing on that first trip because there were so many people there. Everyone was new to us, and Sharath really seemed to be aware of us.
Yeah.
I went to registration with my partner Shamal. We told him that we're South African, and immediately, because he'd just come back from Africa, we were connected in some way, and he showed us some of his wildlife photography.
Awesome.
And I just felt like he was aware of me. Obviously, we weren't, you know, friends or anything, but then from right in the beginning, he knew our names, and I felt that gave me a lot of comfort coming to the shala and practicing with him.
Yeah, it's quite intimidating, right?
Yeah.
I mean, first time you walk into the class, into the old shala, it's like, it was really intimidating. The queue, all of the, you know, intensity of the room, I found it almost like nerve wracking to walk in the first time.
Yeah. Did you feel it was very intense? I remember feeling very fascinated by everything that was happening around, like looking around at people's practice and being like, that's great for those guys, but that's not me. I'm never going to practice that stuff. I'll just keep practicing this.
Yeah.
And the practice has that interesting way of just building on itself so slowly that you don't really realize how much progress is being made.
Right.
But then when you look back on it, you're like, now if I watch that Mysore Magic DVD, I know everyone in the movie. Yeah. I know all the streets. Yeah. I know all the places it was filmed. I know these people personally. I've seen all the poses that I used to look at and be like, that's really amazing for those people, but not me.
Yeah.
That's my practice that I practice daily and feel comfortable with.
Yeah, crazy, right? So much change. I mean, in how many years has it been, actually? Like, has it been like 5 years?
6 trips to Mysore.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So about 7 years practice.
Wow.
Still very young in the practice. I mean, if you consider the lifelong practice, 7 years, you know, it's a child's age.
Of course.
But there's a lot that a 7-year-old can teach a newborn.
That's true. But also the fact that it's a daily committed practice too, like gives a huge amount of experience. And, you know, like, I don't feel like most people make it to 7 years. I don't feel like most people make it to 10 years or whatever it is. It's like, you know, even at my shala, it's like when the new people walk in the room, it's like, I hope they stick around for as long as they can. And most of the time it's for months, not years, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's pretty crazy. So,
yeah.
And so
yeah. You probably a little bit more than that, to be honest, maybe coming on to like 8 years by now or so. But the interesting thing about the journey is that it's not that grind of like, oh, I really need to drag myself out of bed and do this practice today. It's not always like that. It just becomes you after a while.
Yeah.
Like, my worst day of the week is the rest day. I hate rest days.
I usually feel batshit crazy like during that time.
Yeah.
Like,
and sometimes kids, when it's a hard week, you always look forward to it. You're like, oh, the rest day is coming up.
I get to sleep in. You're like, oh, yeah, I get to sleep in. And then everyone's up at 5 a.m. in the morning. It's like, what is going on here? It's like this crazy life.
Yeah. Yeah, I always feel like, wow, this rest day is horrible. I just can't wait to practice again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll see if it's always like that. Now I'm just turned 29.
Okay.
So
you're approaching 30.
Yeah.
Holy crap. It's all downhill after 30.
You think so?
No, I'm just kidding. Know.
I think there's still some good years.
No, there's plenty of good
seeing
years.
Some of the people
30s are the best. Actually, 30s are the best. I'm 38 right now, and it's like it's been the best. 30s have been the best years for sure. So, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about like your yoga philosophy. You know, I know you started a shala not too long ago. Mm-hmm. How's that going, by the way?
It's been an interesting experience, because I think my mentality in the beginning when I started teaching was one of kind of duty. Like, this practice has helped me so much. I need to give that back to other people. And that has its own positives and negatives. We started a small Mysore program in Bali, just because we really like it and we were spending a lot of time in Bali. And we had a handful of students and it grew by word of mouth, and we felt that's, you know, the honorable way to do it rather than getting signed and a big commercial center or something like that. We then spend a lot of time thinking, where do we want to be? What's our long-term thing? Where do we want to live? And I felt, because I've had such a mixed upbringing, that the place that I feel most at home in is Dubai. Mm-hmm. That's where I spent most of my years growing up. And I felt like there's this really honorable thing about coming back to Mysore, doing your sadhana, and bringing it back and giving it to the people in your hometown. And we felt like it would be really powerful to do that in Dubai, because people really need it there. I wanted to help people in the same way that I was helped in Barcelona. I kind of had this idea that that a lot of people there need something like this to move away from the fact that it's a big city, big kind of artificial city. And we always felt very comfortable in Dubai when we went back to visit my parents. They don't live there anymore now. They live there for the better part of 20 years. And whenever we would pop back and visit them, we always felt, okay, yeah, it's really comfortable here. Really a nice break from being out on the road and slumming it for ourselves and backpacking and, you know. And so we went there, we spent a year with our Mysore program, and we grew it in that exact way. We started with a handful of students. We grew by word of mouth. The people that we've been working with have been amazing, really dedicated. And I think also because we did it in that way, just by ourselves, no studio and no, you know, support, marketing support and all of that. The students that we attracted were very genuine. They really wanted to learn. They really wanted to practice, frequently. And over the course of spending that 1 year in Dubai, we don't really see it as our long-term solution. We've discussed this with our students, and because we've gone through this and had this experience with them, they've all amazingly decided to hold together. And now Shamal and I are both here in Mysore, and they're there practicing. And next year we will spend less time in Dubai, and they will be there practicing.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that is. It's not really something that
that is common around the world, self-practice space, self-practice center, where dedicated yogis just come together because they like practicing together. They like each other.
And so are you going to continue to travel?
So because of this, because everyone's held together, the plan now is that I will go back and teach for a while. And then I'll travel and we'll see how things go. I am keen to keep the community going. I'm keen to have other teachers that we know and trust go there. But traveling is something that is in sight for the for the foreseeable future.
You enjoy traveling?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I enjoy it a lot as well. It's like I travel a lot of weekends out of the or a lot of weeks out of the the year. And I get a lot out of like traveling and teaching at other communities. Is that something that you're trying to do as well?
Yes. So now I have a list of invitations that I'll be taking for now, for the immediate future. And I'll just play it just kind of 1 year at a time. I'll see how it develops. And I think where you were quite fortunate is that you spent a decent chunk of time growing and establishing this community. It was really well grounded. And for a Mysore program starting a few years is really the least that takes.
Usually it's 18 months to 36 months, something like that, in order to kind of get it started.
Yeah. It takes some time to establish and integrate properly. Even if you start at a big place where on your first day, because it's a commercial center, there's tons of students, they tend not to be those really grounded, dedicated students who are just thirsty to learn, who want to come to practice all the time, and who would come to practice if you weren't there.
Right.
And that's the really important thing with the Ashtanga practice, is that nothing changes. You have your practice, whether you're in the same room as you usually practice or whether the same person is watching you or not. The yoga doesn't go anywhere just because your teacher goes somewhere.
Right. Because it's the student's practice, or it's my practice. Like, it's to be done not because of someone is specifically watching you. It's really because you're doing your sadhana.
Yeah.
You're doing your journey. And I think a lot of people actually kind of get that, somewhat backwards, where it's like they end up performing for, a teacher, where it really needs to be that they're just trying to be the best versions of themselves, like, and using this tool to actually achieve that.
Yeah, I think that's how it will work most of the time in the beginning until you start to integrate your knowledge and experience. For the most part, people start for either physical reasons or things like that, but you can't just pay for the yoga class and get that one thing back. You have to take the whole thing, the whole package. And when you start to feel psychological, emotional, spiritual benefits from the practice, that comes with it,
not just
the physical and not just the enjoyment that you get from using your new yoga mat or working with an exciting teacher.
Or a new pair of pants and new leggings that you got or whatever.
Yeah.
And so where are your travels going to take you?
So right after this, I'm going to pop back to Dubai. I'll teach for a while. Then I'm going to China, which I'm very excited about. Yeah, it just kind of, that just came about during this class. I was invited and then another studio invited me, and I've got a bunch of invitations that I'll choose. I'll take some of them, not all of them. After that, I'll be in Singapore.
Okay.
And so mostly Asia. I'm going to focus on this area. I tend to feel really good here. The energy, the climate in Asia, the students are amazing.
Yeah. And
so, Asia's been very, very fulfilling to spend time traveling in. And over the course of this trip, sixth trip in Mysore, I feel like a lot of my own experience is kind of coming together, and like everything's just dialing in really well. Like nutrition's starting to become very, very aware of how everything's affecting me, and in general, the energy and the climate of Southeast Asia is where I feel good in my practice and where I feel energized in teaching.
That's cool.
Yeah. Much more so than in Dubai or South Africa or Europe.
Yes, you said earlier, and just to shift subjects or whatever, just slightly, but like you were talking earlier about like the shift between, the old Shala to the new Shala and how it was affecting you. Can you talk a little bit about like what the difference between like your first month and your this month for you, here? Because I thought it was actually quite interesting to hear your perspective on it.
Yeah. So, before I do that, just as a side note on this, my experience with this is not everyone's experience. I feel like for the most part, people have come and got straight into the new Shala and enjoyed it straight away. And the people that I've spoken to, even when we're having a deeper conversation, when I say, how do you feel about the new Shala? Everyone, for the most part, has just been like, oh, I like it. I'm happy with the change. What I experienced in my first month here is kind of a great sadness about leaving the old Shala. I always felt like the old Shala was a very sacred space, and it motivated me a lot. Sometimes you'd be having a difficult time in practice and just look around and be like, look where I am. I'm here in this room. So many people have passed through here and given everything, given their sweat and devotion and, you know, sacrificed their life at home for these few months and money and the energy that it takes to be here. And so I think that all contributes to the intense experience that people have practicing in Mysore. I believe that Mysore tends to be a peaking process in people's practice. And I think that may or may not be controversial, depending on whether people have come here and experienced it. I think it's a nice idea that your practice is always very consistent and you never go ham and you never slack off.
Right.
But I feel that when you're doing anything, any physical endeavor, sports or anything of the sort, it's cyclical. The practice is not linear. It's not that you always have the same practice that you had yesterday plus a little bit more and then plus a little bit more.
Sure.
And when you come to Mysore, over every trip that I've come here, I managed to cycle on a kind of peaking sort of wavelength in the Shala. And I found those peaks to be more intense in the old Shala, whereas here I find the energy to be a lot more sustainable. It might have something to do with the cooler climate because the Shala is all nice and open. It's also full of oxygen. I have a lot more stamina in practice, and I feel that about the people practicing next to me as well.
Sure.
People seem less burnt out. And I actually had this in a conversation with Sharati the other day. He said, did you notice that when people arrived here this season, nobody was getting sick? In the old Shala, people get the flu in the beginning.
Everyone. Yeah, nonstop. Like, I felt like we joked about it. It was like the Mysore flu or...
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah. Yeah. It just becomes like affectionately known as the Mysore flu because it happens to everyone, but it shouldn't really be the case.
No. There's lack of oxygen and proper movement. I mean, we were basically breathing everyone's.
Yeah, it's true. And Shirati would speak about in conference, like, you shouldn't practice yoga in a heated room because that's not natural sweat. You need to create your own sweat. But when I was assisting the early slot, the first slot, when people would start doing Surya Namaskara, I'm just standing there, not even doing anything. I would start sweating. When he would come out and do the mantra, I would feel the sweat dripping off my elbows.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, it's pretty intense. And that's not to be critical of the old Shala. I really love that Shala. Like, I still have, like, some of my deepest, fondest memories practicing in there, learning stuff, making breakthroughs in practice, dealing with all sorts of difficulties. I've been really badly injured in practice in there. I practiced until Parshvottanasana in there, and Shirachi took super good care of me, really patient, really nurturing towards me. And so yeah, I feel very, very deeply connected to that room.
Yeah.
And when we came here at the beginning, for me, it took some time to come to terms with the fact that that isn't what Mysore is anymore.
Yeah.
In my mind, I had this thing where, you know, you go off and you live your year for 10 months and then you come back and it's Mysore. It's exactly the same. And
yeah, there's been a big shift. I mean, and I think it's, you know, a big energetic shift in many different ways, but I've realized that, for me, I mean, I was deeply sad as well, that we were moving out of the old shala. To the new one. But, you know, after practicing there for some time, there are so many positives about it. Really energetically, it just feels so amazing to actually be in there, because there is good energy. There is, air that you can breathe. There's space for people to practice, you know, like where before it was almost nearly impossible to practice, you know?
Yeah, especially the lead classes. Actually, it was really nice. Last season, we had started to do the lead classes in the new shala, but we were still doing all the Mysore classes in the old shala. And you start to realize that in the lead classes in the old shala was more a process of trying to navigate, not kicking someone or getting kicked. Whereas here you can actually feel the primary series, and if you're not doing primary series during the Mysore classes anymore, that's your only chance to enjoy the primary series, which I also love. And that was a similar thing actually. when the primary series was dropped from my practice, I was like, this is amazing. I love second series and everything, but the primary series used to be my practice. Yeah. That was what I would do every
home.
Day.
Like, it was kind of sad. It was sad for me to leave primary series. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. It's crazy. So let's talk a little bit about why you show up at the top of your mat on a continual basis. Like, what is the thing that, you know, over these 7 years, like, what's the big why you come every single day to the top of your mat and every year you come to Mysore, India? Like, what is that, that why?
So it brings so much value to the rest of my day. It's not just that I enjoy the practice. And I mean, I could go into that for hours about like how I love the practice itself and how many, you know, physical benefits and emotional benefits and health benefits and how much, awareness and feedback it gives you about how everything else in your life is affecting you. So it never comes to a point where, oh, for 3 months I've been eating this way and now I'm not feeling so good from it. You just notice that I didn't do my best at nourishing myself yesterday. And I think that's extremely valuable, but also just again, like the rest days are the worst days of the week. I just feel so much better from practicing. It makes me more able to be better throughout the day after.
Yeah.
So I use the practice as a tool to enjoy my life. And then in response to that, I use my life as a tool to enjoy my practice. So I will live the rest of my day with the intention of being my best self when I get back on the mat the next day. And I can feel it if I eat a little bit off. There's so much information about what you should and shouldn't do in terms of like sleeping and working and the type of content that you should take in and the type of food that you need to eat. Like, there's all these dramatic theories that people will push on you about like how many carbs and how like vegetarian or not vegetarian or vegan or plant protein is a good quality and everything. When you have this practice, you can just really dial in, just have the chance to clearly see that if this meal is a little bit different, how it affects me, because you're practicing the same thing so consistently.
Yeah.
And at the moment, I just feel this is, in terms of practice and how I feel in my body, this has been my best season ever.
Yeah.
I never would have thought that I would practice so much. At the moment, I'm practicing what is effective, what is, what's the word, affectionately.
referred to as a marathon practice,
okay.
full, intermediate, and like two-thirds of third.
Right.
And it's just like kind of at that point where it might get cut, but it's still like the long practice. You're doing
I just got mine cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. I balanced on my throat and I did a good enough job that I was like, that he let me do just third series.
Nice.
So, yeah. It was really awesome.
Awesome.
So you definitely have the marathon. It's two and, I mean, I could really kind of go a little fast at maybe like 2 hours and 15 minutes, but most of the time it's about 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a lot of practice and I just feel very acutely aware of how everything affects it on a daily basis. But at the same time, because I'm feeling so good in practice, I always feel confident that I'm going to come back and be able to do it no problem, no pain, no major imbalances, no acute sharp pains or injury or anything like that. And I'm very, very grateful that that's my situation at the moment. I know that it's not always going to be like that. I'm sure things come up and, you know, things change. But at the moment, I'm just feeling really, really good in practice.
That's awesome.
And I think that being in the new shala is a huge part of that as well. Last trip here, I was having a really hard time learning the arm balances of third series.
They're hard.
My arms were so
That's the marathon
exhausted.
Right there. Getting through those, like your heartbeat starts going through your arms.
Yeah. And when Shiratsu would teach me a new pose or anything, like I couldn't, by that time in the practice, I couldn't put my full effort. I was just like, I'm going to give this one try. If it doesn't go well, it's cool. I'm going to go to backbending. And that would be it. And it was an interesting way to learn that part of the practice as well, because when you're new to the practice, you want to know everything. You get a new pose and you go home and watch every YouTube video and you read the blogs and anatomically, how does this work and everything. At that time, I was in a way just putting very little effort into the pose, but still from just trying it once every day. Over the course of that season, I improved a lot in those poses.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating to see that is an option that just giving it a try and leaving it at that, not watching anything, not trying to activate this muscle and not that muscle.
Yeah, it becomes too in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more about doing.
Yeah.
Instead of all the information. I feel like that's been one of the biggest things. I don't look at YouTube anymore or any of that stuff anymore. It just doesn't really help. And it's also never someone who has the same body shape as me too. So it's always like, you know, you end up watching Kino. She's amazing, you know, but she's, you know, she's 2 feet shorter than I am.
I'll walk you through it while I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And give it a try. Yogis, it took me a long time to learn.
Yeah.
And then you're like, it's probably going to take me a long time to learn as well.
Yeah. Well, Ethan, I really appreciate you coming onto the show and sharing a little bit about your perspective and your story and some of the struggles and all this stuff. Is really an enlightening conversation. So I appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you very, very much for having me.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.